Okay, I'm going to start this. I'm just going to spontaneously see what happens. Hello, thanks for coming to this slightly belated starting session, which for I've just got the description of three words: making things happen. But because we're joined here by Tom Loosemore from the sponsor 4IP, which he'll be talking about later this afternoon at 5 p.m., and Tom Steinberg from My Society. They work for you. You write to them, hear from your MP, and fix my street. So anything pronoun related is obviously Tom's expertise. We've also got Louise Ferguson from the Open Rights Group Board of Directors. And I've actually written a bio for you, Louise, but now in all this paper here, I can't find it. But I remember you saying that you were interested in doing some campaigning about farming and sustainable agriculture and people and that. And Simon Willison may turn up at some point as well. Is he there? There he is. Fantastic. And Simon Willison, I hope, needs no introduction because I don't have one. people just know who he is. So the purpose of this discussion, I think, I suggested this should be a sort of dragon's den where people should turn up with their own ideas for activist or socially responsible website construction, and then the experts would discuss them and give you the benefit of their own expertise. To be honest, if there are any dull points, heaven forbid, do chip in, but probably not within the presentation of our first speaker, Tom Steinberg. Or is it you? It's Tom. Actually, it's Tom Loosemore. They're all Toms.
Thank you. Thank you, Danny. Oh, whatever it is. So I haven't got a presentation, and I would quite like to do this as in a Dragon's Den kind of thing, which I think Tom Steinberg is going to do more of in a minute. But I wanted to reflect on what I think the barriers are to making things happen now, because I think they're different from what they were 5-10 years ago. 5-10 years ago, doing things like fax your MP, they work for you. A lot of the barriers... I'll speak louder. Is that better? 5-10 years ago, the barriers were often technological. There was, could you find the right kind of developers who would work for nothing, and you could stroke them gently, and they would do wonderful things. There's many more developers doing wonderful things who don't need stroking or by themselves. he says, I'll get my coat. I think the barriers now, and when I look about what the role that some of the things I've played over the last few years in particular, it's not been around getting the Simon Willisons or Francis Irvins or Matthew Somervilles of this world the space and room to do make their wonderful stuff that improves Britain. It's about protecting them from lawyers and from bureaucracy. And I just want to spend a couple of minutes or 5 minutes on law, because the internet is now not an edge case. It's central to the lives of Britain. It's recognized universally as being so. And so if you're going to do things that are radical and challenge and innovate and make people in power's lives difficult, at some point, if you're doing the right thing, if you're causing enough good trouble, you're going to get a letter, or you're going to get someone coming down on you more or less heavily. So I just want to talk through a bunch of experiences that I've had and give you, well, I won't give you any tips, but you should hopefully get a bit of a theme about how you might want to deal with it when you find someone trying to stop you making something happen. First one was up my street back in 1998, where we stole a load of government data and repackaged it around a postcode. There was no licensing regime then for that kind of data. And we had a very simple plan, which was, let's wait till Her Majesty's Stationery Office rings up. When they do ring up, let's say, do you want us to take the site down? And keep asking them that question, safe in the knowledge that they wouldn't dare, because it would be a very simple PR story, should they do so. Sure enough, a week after Up My Street launched, the phone rang, I got it. Lawyer from HMSO saying, you're using Crown copyright information without a license. I said, oh, I'm really sorry. Would you like us to take the site down? Oh, no. And it would have taken years to go around the sort of 20 or so different government departments to try and get a license off each of them. And to give credit to government, actually, about a year or so, or 18 months after that, they introduced a single click-use Quran copyright license that does make real life relatively simple around Quran copyright, which, by the way, is a relatively unrestricted license, Quran copyright, despite having the Queen in there somewhere with a crown. You can do some good stuff with Quran copyright. So that was early days. They work for you. There's a separate piece of copyright license called the parliamentary license, which covers only the dealings that go on within Parliament. There was no chance in hell of us getting a parliamentary license in time for the launch of They Work For You, which was one of the predecessors of this event, if I remember, 2005. But what we did do was to go into Parliament and talk to the clerks. So these are the people who actually run Parliament on behalf of MPs. And we showed them the site, and we said, well, we're sort of going to launch this beta version, and, you know, not many people will see it, and it'll all be fine, and sure enough, it launched, and it was a beta, but we all know what a beta is. They rang up. One of them rang up very, very upset, actually. It was one of my less proud moments dealing with a rather good clerk. Well, she wasn't a clerk. She was more junior than that. And we just had to buy her a big bunch of roses and say, really, really sorry. Please, can we have a license? And actually, 3 months later, they did actually give a license out. But it's not just dealing with copyright where you hit problems with the law when you're trying to do interesting things. Again, with They Work For You, we got a bit of a tricky incident where, because there's parliamentary privilege, means that MPs and Lords can't be sued for what they say in Parliament, they often say things and accuse people of things that are a little bit contentious. Now, what wasn't clear was whether They Work For You, given it was copying Hansard identically, was also covered by what's known as parliamentary privilege. And so there was a letter received, I won't give you the exact case, a letter received, a rather angry letter from someone who actually had been falsely accused in a written answer of having done something, having been convicted for something they hadn't been convicted for. We didn't really think much of this, did we, at the time? It wasn't a huge issue for us, but we mentioned it to someone who knew a politician. And about 2 days later, on the floor of the House, They Work For You was debated by the leader of the House, Jack Straw, and the shadow leader, Baroness, whatever her name is, in which Jack Straw reiterated, yes, as far as he was concerned, as far as the House was concerned, They Work For You was covered by parliamentary privilege. He actually made the law up on the floor of the House, just for our site. So it's amazing what you can achieve if you just ask a few questions. The next one I want to talk about is video for Parliament, also covered by parliamentary privilege. And this time, safe in the knowledge that there's absolutely no... that you leveraging confusion, because the copyright situation around video of Parliament is unbelievably complicated. It took us about 6 months to understand it. I'm not sure even people involved really understand it. And so what They Work For You did then was take BBC Parliament video, put it on They Work For You, segmented per speech, done beautifully with a crowdsourced application that I never believed would work, and I had to eat my hat. And sure enough, such was the chaos and confusion between the BBC and Parliament that no one's kicked up a big enough fuss for it to be an issue. A trickier one, much trickier one actually, which is where Danny O'Brien was very helpful, was when...
Is that him?
There he is. No, it was. Sorry, Dave Green was very helpful. No, Danny O'Brien was very helpful. Was when you start getting very scary lawyers' letters, and They Work For You's got some pretty scary lawyers' letters in its time, primarily around how it treats, how it tries and represents and contextualises in a simple enough way the parliamentary voting record, as in this MP voted predominantly, modestly for the Iraq War. One particular MP, actually a minister, was very, very, very upset about the way that she had, in my view, entirely accurately been portrayed, particularly around her voting record for the war, and a series of increasingly irate and threatening emails began arriving. Now, bear in mind, this was a minister in the Ministry of Justice, formerly a barrister. We were getting a little bit concerned until... I spoke to Danny O'Brien, who said, I recognise that kind of letter. If they were really serious about suing you, she wouldn't be getting this angry. Just ignore it. And sure enough, it was pure bluster, and nothing came of it. So if someone's getting really threatening and blustery with you legally, they're probably not going to actually do anything serious. They're just trying to scare you and threaten you. Wouldn't use that as case law. A little bit of experience of lawyers in the BBC. Never tell them anything until you've built it. Then show their boss. Get boss excited. Lawyers will then do what boss wants. Very simple strategy. applies in Channel 4, I hate to say. Always buy lawyers. When you're working in bureaucracies and you want lawyers to do things for you, to enable you to do things, just be nice to lawyers and buy them mini eggs and things. I bought mini eggs yesterday to say sorry to a lawyer because he had to work very late last night to get a contract through because I hadn't told him about it, even though it'd been built. So be nice to the lawyers in your organisation if you're within a bureaucracy. They're genuinely trying to be, generally trying to be on your side. Again, in terms of blockages, I spent 3 months in Cabinet Office this time last year working with Tom Watson. There is another way of getting things done that I saw Tom Watson do, particularly in terms of getting the postcodes released for the Show Us a Better Way competition last year. And that, frankly, was pure political brutality. I would not want to have been on the other side of the table in the shoes of the post office trying to keep those postcodes in. So that sometimes you get things done just by getting someone big and scary shouting at people who are stopping you doing things. I'd never do that myself, but I've seen it done. that's what lobbyists do. Just to finish, on the law theme, very important to get inside of the heads of lawyers, particularly British lawyers. American lawyers, in my experience, are a bit different. British lawyers hate being held responsible for stopping things happen. They really hate that. And so a very simple tactic that I've developed over the years, when a lawyer is sort of asking really difficult questions of you and saying, are you sure there's this? You know there's this? I'm not so sure about this. There's risk here, defamation, contempt, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you presented the arguments back saying, well, it's about balancing risk. It's about how you manage the risk. You know, if there was no risk, we wouldn't even cross the road. If you've had all those arguments about how you've managed the risk and you still think it's worth doing, ask them if they're going to stop you. Very, very crunchily. Say, please would you write me an email telling me I can't do this? And they very rarely will they do that. What they usually do is send you an email back saying, I have given my professional opinion about the risks here to Tom, and he has given some mitigation to the risks. In my opinion, the risks here are still considerable, blah, 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 but they don't say no. Much as though they sound like they will, they don't like to say no. So that's my little pressy of lawyers who increasingly are a barrier to actually making things happen. And that's a good thing, because that means the internet is now part of everyday life. On which note, over to Tom.
Thank you. Great. Does this one here work? Great. We're going to have an interactive session. Thank you. One of the ways of getting things done is to tell people that you have a really good idea and to describe it to them really well. And earlier this week, I was presented with a chance where to present an idea, and I described it sort of rather off the cuff because I hadn't done a lot of work around it. And it's a really important idea. And here's the story. Heather over there, Heather Brook, basically destroyed our democracy this year, you might have noticed.
Dame Heather Brook.
Yes, Dame, yes. Dame. In fact, you can, if you just see here, you'll see the other open office document I have open is actually the nomination for UK National Honours, which is for Heather, which we will get sound effect. It's a really, really boring document, so I really hope that some of you will help me with it. But it's not the one we're doing now. What we ended up, Heather and I, on Tuesday this week was in front of the Committee for Standards in Public Life, which sounds profoundly uninteresting, but what that means is this is the committee who has been given the task of saying what should happen about MPs' expenses, and because all the politicians were so scared in the middle of the scandal, they basically all said, even though we don't know what this committee is going to say, we're going to say that we're okay with it. Unless they say something, you know, unless they like slip in some clause about, and all the firstborn will be slaughtered, you know, we will essentially endorse anything they say. And that was their way of going, we're so contrite, we're so scared, please don't kick us. We will let this independent group basically say what the rules should be. And they've had masses of witnesses. And as you'd expect, those witnesses sit there and they say, I think MPs should get paid less, and I think MPs should get paid more. And all of that is all very well, but it's not even slightly what I was interested in talking about. What I was interested in talking about was how are we going to get this information in the future? Exactly how, and what will we be able to do with it? And the reason that I was there to talk about that is, one, because My Society runs They Work For You, and it's sort of one of the organizations that might use that data. But secondly, because I knew that absolutely nobody else would go to a panel like that and talk about something like technology. The witnesses are all going to talk about rules, basically. And
sorry.
Including the rule of not pulling the microphone out if you don't like the speaker. Is that commentary, Dave?
If we want to get the audience involved, we could use a longer mic cable, but apparently you're using it.
Oh, okay. So it matters a lot that you put the right kind of expenses data out. And if you had any doubt that it mattered doing it the right way, Parliament rather marvellously proved that you can do it totally the wrong way, because, of course, they put out the version with all the black boxes. I was going to try and make some black boxes on here, but then I decided that joke had already been done to death. So I have already made my own list of things that we want from this software, and I want from you in the next 10 minutes or until whenever you get bored, I want to help make the best possible list so that I can write it up properly with, you know, with like on headed notepaper, and I can send it to the committee as a formal evidence document. Now, they are not going to get any other evidence like this from anyone else. This is essentially the only document that will suggest something technical like this. And also, I got the feeling that they sort of liked the idea of doing it properly because they were also aware of the ludicrousness of putting them out in those rubbish PDFs with the big black boxes. So I'm just going to type two lines as sort of examples of the sort of thing that I think a good expenses system should do. And then I really want to open it up and just write this document together, or rather just write some notes together. The very first thing to say is that the back end system where MPs actually claim their own expenses, you know, the process that handles the money, should be the same as the one the public sees, in that it should be driven by one database, such that when an expense gets approved and whoever is responsible says, yeah, that doesn't look suspicious and it doesn't involve any ducks, they will press OK, the MP will get paid, and it will be put in and it will be put online. There is no reason for there to be two systems where essentially you get an unrelated copy. So the back end, same as front end, just for notes. Another thing, which is really specific, is that if you have images of receipts, and they do have genuinely sensitive information, like someone's credit card number, rather than fake sensitive information like their address, then you know there's a case to say that should be basically blacked out, should be censored. Let's call it censoring, not redacting. But when you introduce that black box, there should be a version history that says who did it. So censoring comes with version history and attribution. Just.
There's an address under here, or a credit card number, or so what's underneath?
Exactly. So, I'm going to press save here while you're thinking about the next things to write down, because it would be terrible to get all your ideas and then lose them in a hard drive crash. I'll put it in my Dropbox so that it actually gets backed up somewhere. And would anyone like to make the next suggestion of something that the system should do? Think about the basics, for starters.
Location data. Well, I mean, if they're sort of bouncing around all over the country and spending things in various places, then this is the problem with the second homes, for example, is that they were short distances away from things, and it's easier to tell than they were on their short distance.
Are you saying that an expense itself, like a receipt, should be geocoded, or the house to which it was sent, or both?
Both.
Okay.
Where it was spent and if it's applicable to say something like the second owner's allowance wanted to be spent on.
I think you're going to have trouble if you start asking for data which they're not capturing in the general course of things. So the fact that they spent this money at a service station on the M6 is not important for deciding necessarily, you know, generally as part of the process. They say, I was on my way to an official engagement, you have to accept that or not. So if you try and put extra work on the approval people, they're going to kick back against your whole document.
For the moment, I'd like to leave the political feasibility aside and just start with a wish list. And what do you mean by that?
Well, I can see that it's going to be perceived as quite useless surveillance if you're going to geocode every receipt they submit. Because among other things, it provides a nice database of all their movements ever.
And the public interest in the public fund.
In the public fund, yes. That could involve things like visiting somebody who is accused of an unfashionable crime, or is a person who is politically subversive, or is in the same characters, where you're being spied upon, might identify police, might be legal. And this can get, you know, like certain railway shares, then it's quite useful.
Okay, and just before I move to other people, just to answer that partly, to say there will be, this committee will come up with exceptions itself. It will determine the stuff that it thinks should be in the public domain and shouldn't. It will set those rules. All we can say here is that once those rules are applied, the data structure that they are enforced by should produce good data. You've already had one over here.
An obvious one, but all the data that's in the database that's available to the public.
That's a separate. Yeah, Tom just said, can't we get them to do bills? If, in fact, I was thinking if we had enough time, we'd do what we're doing now for bills. But over there,
I've got an idea for data capture. I don't know, most people who work for big enterprises today are issued with a corporate credit card or a piece of purchasing card, and they say any expense that should be reimbursable has to go through that card. Now, the back end of that card, most big credit card companies like Barclaycard, Corporates, and Amex Corporate will give you an electronic list of all the transactions. So basically all the fuzzy data capture that I might have gone with big receipts disappear. So automatically you have transaction date, time, what was what, but flight temperature, which is flight temperature, you think number there, and you also have the geocoding built in because you have taken the rest of the vendor and
So that's essentially interoperability with electronic bank records.
Replace paper receipts with
if you work for, I don't know, a consulting company and they have to deal with Amex, then all employees have Amex cards, and Amex just sent one big file or a file per employee.
I get that. If you think I've kind of unfairly written up, come up afterwards, we'll modify it. Over there, there's loads of hands. I didn't really expect this.
Question, do expenses just get updated once a year? Because I could imagine say if you just wanted to investigate these things, the way you've done every quarter, so you've done so or even just an individual activist was wanting to find out stuff, then I think the impedance to, as you say, quarterly expenses, then it could be more useful for activists to pick up on that. So you could report things to local newspapers or things like that.
Are you saying that people should be able to sort of query the database on a quarterly basis, for example? Because there is no reason here, of course, why the an expense can't be made public essentially the very instant at which it is approved. But you're saying that humans basically need nice data kind of added up into nice simple numbers. That's good. That's a really good point. At the back. For reviewing censorship. Yeah, and one of the problems that we've seen in the last few weeks is the fact that that procedure is really hard to do because you have no idea which of the kind of badly paid temps did which page because there's no data. Over on the far left here.
Ability to, for the public to have their own metadata,
for third party metadata. Okay, down here.
So you said that it would be queryable what the expenses have been approved, but you should be queryable including the things that have been submitted beforehand, so we can see which people have given the claim or tried to claim the stuff that said they're not, and other people just haven't passed them out, or is that too far?
I don't know, I would ask Heather about this. I would look at her to my arbiter. The question was essentially, this is just a structured data on money that they actually got. His question is, shouldn't there also be structured data on money they applied for but had turned down?
Yes. Well, so this would be, somehow you'd have to capture the communication with the fees office, so submitted claims as opposed to processed claims and rejected claims. So you could have, I don't know, so there would be two data sets where the claims all come in, the amount, and then an action as to what happened to the claim.
Okay. Essentially, complete version history for every field of data within a claim, yeah, okay.
If you're quite quiet, could you come to the front and to make your point? And that'd be quite exciting. That'd be like a town hall meeting. No one's actually going to do that, are they? Because you're literally at as far. Okay, you're going to shout.
There. Sorry, did Danny just nominate someone? Sorry.
He says he's going to shout, Tom.
Go.
Okay, the rules that everything's going to be applied to all this needs to be put in the system, possibly the rules engine or something that everyone can see what it is that actually expensive value. And when stuff is submitted that you can actually see that it falls within this category.
Yeah.
And
We have that in the petition site we run for number 10, in that if there's 19 different ways your thing can be rejected, and if it's whichever one it is in the data structure, and that's useful. I have just going to do a little bit more of this, but Tom has essentially suggested something here, which is that we do a few more minutes of this and then actually move onto a similar session for the remaining 15 minutes or so, which is actually what you want from bills and laws in this way, because that's a campaign we've been fighting for longer, and with the new speaker there's a chance of pushing it through more effectively. We actually got John Bercow to endorse on the record before he was voted that he was in favour of better bills. But one of the things that will help explain why bills are good is if we have the most comprehensive possible list of things that you can do with better bills. Would people be interested in that in 5 minutes or... Yeah, good, brilliant. Okay, we'll move on. I'll take like the next five hands on this, and then we'll go on to the next bit. Richard. Very simple. Next to Richard. Sorry, there, yeah.
Similar to the third-party metadata, but just simple annotation.
Okay, so free text annotations and the ability to tag as similar to other objects, I suppose. Is that a fair assessment? There, in the blue shirt.
Okay. Yeah, I think the timeline thing was already brought up a bit, but I think managed timelines, so that there's when they can be accessible, there's when it was approved, how long between purchase and submission. So I think the overall timeline should be some fixed management period. It's easy to meet gaps and find that actually the period between purchase and
sorry, I think you've already had one. Just behind you there? Sorry, can you speak up a bit?
Expand the sensory grid sector. Instead of just having a comment, say that this is from A, this is from B, summarizing meaningful
So if homes have to be anonymous, they at least have unique IDs. Yeah? Is that fair? Keep towards the back, Fran, there, I think. Yeah. I can't hear you, sorry.
Or shout. A functionality, better functionality?
Actually, while you're walking to the front, do you want to shout there?
Get the information released under a license that allows other websites to be freely distributed.
Excellent point. We have seen cases, Heather knows all about these, where one form of suppression of freedom of information is just using copyright in an unfair way, effectively. Right.
A bit of functionality to say, who should I ask about this? So if it's censorship, you can click a button and email fees office. If it's a duck house, I can email my MP about it.
Okay, so sort of actions tied to elements. Wow, there's so many of you. It's almost like everybody's really interested in this issue. Right at the very, very back. So, this is your fault, Heather. So. So this is if, for example, a member of the public makes a query. Okay.
That's the freedom of information system that you've got that applied to the correspondence related to the receipts.
Okay, I'm going to put this in jargon for myself. WTK stands for what do they know? Style correspondence. Okay. You can't expect me to type under pressure and get it all right. Right. Let's just literally have two more of these and then move on onto the law. So, hang on, did we have you before? I'm sorry. And we've had you before as well. And at the end there, I think you're new. So,
I like what someone said about corporate credit cards. When I claim something, I have to say what project I claim for. So, if it's a second house allowance, for office allowance, so what project, if you like, what bucket?
It's a great demonstration of how some of the very simplest things in data structures can be forgotten while you're worrying about the hard ones. That's a very, very good point. And then the last person there at the back with the bald head.
Behind you.
sorry, I'm now confused. Was there? I can't see past the light. So yes. I think that we'd already have that from what someone said before about the locations of the companies that had been contracted, and it would certainly come from the company's house information that Richard mentioned. I'm really sorry. There's now 15 minutes left, and we have to do the whole of the law. So if you will bear with me, does anyone know the short key press for insert page break? So. Let's have a go. This is crowdsourcing knowledge. No. Oh well, I'll just do the old-fashioned way. There we go. The law. More importantly, bills. And again, just like last time, I'm going to seed it with a couple of the very, very simplest components to kind of get you thinking. So one is bills. If are essentially legal documents with headings and sub-subheadings and sub-sub-sub-sub-sub-subheadings. And we all know from any system that has information arranged in a tree like that that you want to be able to have nesting. You want to be able to just look at a bill and see it only has three headings, where those headings are chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, and they all have a little plus next to them, and you press plus and it expands. It's a super simple functionality. You can't do it today. Another is alerts, and we know from They Work For You that alerts, while unsexy, remain terribly important. The ability to use the computer to be your watchdogs to see whether something's been mentioned in Parliament is totally insignificant compared with the possibility of your computer being the watchdog to watch day and night to see if a law has been tabled mentioning your house, for example, or your job or your industry or even you, if you're Brian Hoare. Would people please start again?
Are you asking about features of the data feed from Parliament? Are you asking about features of the website representatives?
I would like to mainly focus on the second one because we can get into very, very long convoluted discussions about different ways of delivering the exact same end user function. So I'd like to describe this problem in that way. And you've been very patient and so.
Well, three things here. First of all,
you get two, so.
Type of legislation, is it primary, is it statutory instrument, is it an ordinary council? And if it is one of those, what primary legislation is it dependent on? Or it's, what are its dependencies?
Do you want to say a little bit more about what you mean by dependencies?
Well, if it's a statutory instrument or any kind of secondary legislation, it refers to
a piece of
primary.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So, so for the people understand it.
Yeah.
So, okay. The other one is after that would be an RSS feed that changes to the text. Because the whole point about this is that you want to track the process of the text's development. So you should be able to see it and to learn to monitor it.
Okay.
Questioning again, you need to be able to monitor changes.
Thank you very much. At the front here.
Linking changes within the bill for its passage through committee with the debate in committee on the relevant clauses.
Linking.
So seeing where did that change in the bill come from? So in committee they'll have a big long discussion saying, well, we don't think it should be there, it should be there, blah, blah, blah.
And I take it probably not just the debate, but actually the votes.
Yeah.
So. Again, afterwards, I'd like to continue a conversation we were having last night about the actual data structure that it takes to make this, which is quite hard. But right now, I just want to know what the public should be able to do as a consequence. Right in the middle there, in the blue top, I think. Yeah. No, you're looking at.
I've got a question regarding alerting, so a suggestion. So you mentioned alerting, you want to see whether your house is impacted. I think there's a wider issue of how would you structure data about whether you want an alert or not. So for example, I could put in my postcode WC1 something and I would get if there was a bill related to my street, but would I also be able, for example, to get a London bill or, you know, my council is being affected by this bill or something like that. And it goes wider on keywords. So for example, if I'm interested in, I don't know, Sharia courts, but something comes about around the religious freedom, then I'm probably interested, but if I only type Sharia courts and it doesn't mention Sharia courts, then I won't get another say so be able to kind of widen the search keywords, if you will.
Someone's about to use the horrible word semantic. Can you explain what I should type here to summarize what you just said? Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Search done properly.
Okay.
That's a bit of it. I think that's really misinterpreted. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? So it's all about kind of, yes, it's all about how do you ensure that if I ask for an alert for something very specific, or if I ask for an alert for something generic. So if I put an alert on religious freedom, but if something comes through a direct cross,
then my handle starts to say clustering. And if I search for football, it'll show me things in practice.
Yeah, okay. So it's essentially topic, introducing the idea of topics into the data in some way. Sorry, people are talking at the same time. Can you do that again?
It's similar to what you've done on planning alerts. I put it in my postcode and I draw a circle around.
What he did on planning alerts.
Someone did on planning alerts. So you've got planning alerts, they draw a circle around it, and I imagine, you know, you can do something similar with topics. So if I'm interested in, I don't know, religion, then Sharia kicks in and I get an alert.
Okay, I'm going to leave that as topic classification. In front of William there, I think. So, that's you, yeah.
Old builds tend to supersede, new builds supersede old builds. When you're browsing the old build, it would be fantastically useful if the text that's no longer applicable is grayed out and a date for when it's no longer applicable.
When?
Or if the new build.
more specifically, you want to see what a bill looks like now, as opposed to when it was passed. So the Children's Act was passed in 1998, but every single government since then has had a Think of the Children bill, which makes some change to it.
Yeah.
So I want to, when I view the Children's Act 1998, I want to click a button which shows me what it looks like with all of the amendments. And actually, figuring out how to do that automatically will tell you a lot about the data structures you need out of Parliament. Because when they write, as amended so on in this clause, and that stuff has to be in the markup if you're going to automatically apply that dip to the original bit in the right place. So if you can figure out how to make that work, you'll probably have the right data structure.
Hang on, sorry, we've heard quite a lot. There's loads of people with their hands up. The gentleman there, in the middle, there, with the pen. Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up on the last point. When people propose amendments to bills, you know, potentially for, on page 12, like, to change the word aeroplane to pounds. Actually, it sounds a concept. It'd be great if when amendments are proposed, you show why you can make an amendment to bills in the appendix.
So show how bill will be different if an amendment is passed. Okay? Right at the far back, lady. Linking well, URLs basically. Am I gonna say URI or URL? Who will boo me which way? I'm going to lose some friends. And they're L's. you can tell I work in politics. For each paragraph. Well, an interesting discussion we had last night was whether actually a paragraph is sufficient or whether you need to go smaller, but that's for later on.
You're going to have a problem with all of this because it's okay for people to get a bit of an understanding of law like yourself, but if this has happened in the local community, there's people that are just going to look at this and going to be completely lost. So maybe you're going to need to get some tape or, I know talking entirely different procedure, but you're going to need to get some tape to explain it somehow so that people have to understand what's going on or what are the implications of some super technical language. A certain clause is something and how it relates to everything else. I know that that's really putting a hand grenade into what we're trying to do here, but you need too much information or too much abstract information can be very destructive to what people wasn't trying to
do. There already are official explanatory notes which are in plain English if you're born in the 18th century. So whatever this system is, it needs to be able to cope with the idea that a paragraph or even a word has an explanation. The maybe the harder problem is for it to have N explanations, plural. The lady in the middle there? Sorry, speak up again, please.
Oh, I wanted to add to this point, which was just basically
okay, I'm sorry, I didn't completely hear the end of that, but again, I've just put commentable for the minute, and if you'd like to come and explain it more fully after, that would be great. You in the grey t-shirt.
For people like me, I'm a foreigner here, and a lot of this stuff seems to have played out in a couple of countries and to the wider international audience. So would it be possible that open source platforms in other countries, developing countries, can you just template as well your own systems?
Yeah.
Also following on that, it's something perhaps for the next 10 years, but it'd be amazing if we could coordinate some of the laws with other countries to see the freedom of information, what is the equivalent in Canada or in Australia or India or the others or one of the other countries, and get a more holistic view of where the laws are globally as opposed to just in the UK.
I'm going to put international reference. It was the previous discussion we just had about expenses. One of the things I said in the committee is that you, the committee, should recommend that this is built, and you should recommend it's all open source, really specifically because Parliament's only one of 100,000 public bodies in this country, and most of them have some kind of expenses. Make a good enough system, they can all use it. Again, William?
Two things that you had in the last one, really. It needs to be in real time. The critical special is in committee, and the Parliamentary Council might have been 100 amendments in 48 hours, and consequently,
be in real time, it needs to be the same system that the car manufacturers are taking on this using themselves. Otherwise, you'll get a 24-hour lag, which will ruin the point of it.
Mm.
Very strong support, the ability to be useful, because even in the meeting, many MPs don't understand, you know the answers on the internet, actually what they're voting on, because it's so complex. And at that point, that's where lobbyists exert the most influence, and having open just that process with the
Okay.
One challenge here is that what we are recommending is that the bills today are just published in a better format, but that ultimately the entire process by which they get authored needs to change. That means that we need to describe a standard that can cope with the relatively limited information we can extract from current bills, but also won't break in the future when you go and totally rebuild the system for making these things from scratch. You want that to be consistent. The lady there?
One thing we do section Washington State, so there is the bill, there is the initiative, but the person who's proposing it has a fairly succinct argument for, and then somebody is given a platform to give a fairly succinct argument against. So, in keeping with that man's point that the nominee would be nice to first go through this and see, oh, this is what it's about, and this is why that person is about, you know, to be able to have these types of interactions and possibly have each party be able to say their position on the bill. And probably
I think that that's actually been covered in various different components here, the ability to leave comments, for example. I'm not sure if anyone has actually just said the ability to store multiple versions of any paragraph. Clearly, that's the very essence of version control in, say, Wikipedia or in a software system, and that would need to go in here as well. You there. You. Yes, you.
Yeah, there should be
Danny's friend.
Danny, yeah. An educational version for schools. So it's a graphical explanation of how the bill's going, maybe in terms of colour or size, to process through Parliament. And that possibly might be easier for people to get, but not massively digital as well.
Yep.
How are we doing for time, by the way? Sorry, I can't see anything in this bit here because of the light.
Some metadata such as how much time has been spent in committee, how much time has been spent on the floor of the House actually debating. Added to the length of the bill, this might be indicative of just how much attention to detail or not has been paid.
Yeah. Very, 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 again, this just points out that these very simplest things that go in data structures like timestamps sometimes get forgotten while we're talking about the more more exciting kind of convolution. In the white shirt there.
And speaking of time, Tom, those numbers at the bottom of your screen indicate. No, what I'm going to suggest, I mean, clearly I think you can carry on here for quite some time. Unfortunately, it's lunch. So I would suggest if people want to stick around, you can probably do this. How much longer can you have? How much battery do you have on that?
It goes on for 5 hours.
So there's a challenge. So what I'm going to suggest is that anyone who wants who requires physical sustenance at this point could go out and get something to eat. And you're happy to carry on here for a bit longer.
I will give up my lunch break for the sake of the law.
Does anyone else have other comments that were perhaps unrelated to this specifically that they'd like to make at this stage? Is it law related? And if people can't hang around, Tom, how much will this cost? Well, you'll be around to answer questions for the rest of the day. And will you be continuing this consultation process online?
It goes without saying.
Isn't that what you do? Isn't that what you're famous for? Brilliant. Just for now, if you could join me in thanking the Toms, Louise, Heather, Stuart.
Thank you.
And if you come back at 2 o'clock, there'll be a fight between the Toms and Ben Goldacre and Bill Thompson.
Okay, I'm not in the next bit. I think people used to probably just come up at this point.
Definition. So builds on what starts definition.
Yeah.
So they need to be marked on the way that means the way for one way to use it. If words have been specially defined on that build,
yeah,
then you can, you know, bounce over it and, you know, get that definition to remind you that in fact the word doesn't actually mean what you think it means. English means something completely different. Yeah, so that's it. So definitions at the top of the build have to be marked in a way that you also know.
I can't find the end button on this. Why don't you come up here instead of sitting? I'd also really like if someone could turn the projector off and I could have my sight back. That would be brilliant, thank you.
The line that says commented, I understood the original suggestion was a plain English explanation that is in a big style kind of vote up, vote down, so that the crowdsourced most useful explanation goes to the top.
Is that okay? Because there is some annotation which is at a per paragraph level or a per word level, but then there is also annotation which is just the notes for the whole document, the summary of the whole thing.
I was thinking of a zooming kind of effect, so if you wanted an overview, all you saw was the comments on the overall kind of sections, etc. But if you go into it, then it goes down and down, kind of just like a Google Photo effect. You can zoom in. It is graphical and user orientated, fair enough, and that would be by user testing. But it would just be so that you get an overview if you're far out, and that's all you want to see. But you delve in, like Wikipedia, and just kind of get into the root of it.
Okay. It's going to be such a massive user interface.
One of the things they have is this timeline where you can drag it along and the discussion kind of pops into view.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you had, say, the children's app, I don't know whether this would actually be useful, actually, let's think about it. So you start with the 1998 version, you drag the slider along, this is what it looked like in 99, and so on. So that's kind of falls out of the whole, we need to see where patches were applied.
Somebody who's very good with JavaScript could do after they've got the bloody great data space.
Right.
So, you need data.
I mean, I think it is more about what do you need in the data format that lets you automatically apply patches to builds when you get the new bit, yeah? Mm. So at the moment, I suspect that it's not marked up in a way that would allow you to do that completely automatically. You'd have to do all sorts of, okay, let's read through, it's probably a patch to this bill, and so on. And that'd be very hard, and then match up the letters and numbers and parse the text that says, replace para what's it with what's it. And really, that needs to be metadata, rather, as well as English.
This is another difficulty with it. This is modifying bills that have been passed years ago. Those old bills. Mm.
When they're passed, they become acts.
Yeah.
So,
they won't be in whatever new format it is that we need them to.
So we may have to crowdsource the marking up.
I mean, there already has been a process of improving what was there a lot, but nothing like with the complexity that we're talking about to do these very advanced things. But they now have like permalinks for the paragraphs, which is a huge step forward. So. And in fact, the person who drove that project is John Sheridan. He's here and maybe doing a session later on. So it's you. I didn't realise who right at the back. Anyway, sorry.
Geographical applicability of the bill. So does it apply to England or Wales?
That's important.
Yeah.
What I also wondered is whether we could link in the consultation to the effect of the bill.
Much more simple than that. It needs to be integrated with the speeches in Hansard.
That's my point.
I've actually already got that. It's both in committees, in the chamber.
If nobody's done a write-up of it, then you can just use the speech of whoever introduces it in the House.
Mm. No, but for public interaction, the consultation is where they would take part, so that's the best linking place.
I mean, in some ways, the discussions, solving the discussions that happen anywhere on the internet, whether it's in Hansard or in the consultation or on someone's blog, is an overall problem that needs solving. It needs to be able to cope with them anywhere, and it needs to understand that there is a difference, or at least to mark up the fact that there is a difference between a conversation that happened in Hansard and one that happened on my blog. So.
Nowadays, government departments are meant to choose assessments or bills, which basically shows that it's about what the bill is going to do in real life.
they're very rarely realistic.
Yeah,
though.
The problem is because they're not available online, so they're really dense, but
yeah.
They should be linked.
I still, think probably one of the best tech analogies to this is almost certainly a Linux package manager.
Yeah.
Because again, it's laws are very white code in the sense that you're using them, you have this text which then affects other things. So you need for each item, you're going to need at the very top level metadata. It's geographical applicability. What, when it was introduced and by whom,
yeah.
And what stage it's at, and what it either amends or supersedes or creates anew.
Or resource control system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah, and then below that you can then have each level of revision.
Yeah.
What text changed in it.
The hardest thing here, the most difficult thing about delivering this,
yeah.
Is the bit that allows you to provide the user with the service, which is essentially, if this amendment passed, how would this bill change? And the reason it's complicated, it's extra complicated, is that you can have conflicts, essentially.
Yeah.
And you can have, this bill says it amends the 1988 Act. But the 1988 Act was also modified in 1998.
Yeah.
So you have two different sets of things that produce a final piece of law that is currently the law of the day.
Well, actually, that's because of
presumably the one they're modifying is
the
Act as amended.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
they're only modifying what the state is now.
Yeah, but if
so
you want to show the user the original Act and show them how all these different things came in at different times, you have a degree of complexity, especially if one of them modifies paragraph one, and then later on paragraph one gets made into a different, just an unrelated paragraph. They just change the numbering, and then paragraph one gets modified by something else. Then you have two modifications.
It's not going to be of very great use to anybody other than historians. To look at what this amendment would have done to the act, to such and such an act, if that act hadn't been amended in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's not really information of any operational significance.
Except if we can design a spec without postponing things, without having endless W3 style kind of arguments, then obviously we want a spec that can handle edge cases, because there might be someone who turns out that if they can solve that problem you just described, they can spot something amazingly important in the history of British legislation. And we shouldn't just judge that no one will ever find that a useful thing. If we can see there is
a
use case, our system can't support it, we should worry about that at least a bit, and we should try, unless it's going to make the whole thing miss its deadline and never get implemented at all.
Can I make a small usability?
Yeah.
I don't know. So you talked about URLs or URIs to specific things, but internal and external URL. So if a part of the bill says, as described in section 2, then there's a link to section 2. But also if it says, as defined in the Criminal Justice Act, paragraph 2, whatever, then there's a link out to that. So that because that's what I find with things like Hansard or bills as they are at the moment, it just says, see this. But you could just probably click here.
Yeah, so it's, links, essentially anything that ever, when you ever get an occurrence that says the name of something and a paragraph number, clearly that should be
a thing. Just brackets around it and link to it. Yeah.
So.
And anyway, just as before I have my lunch, a point about MPs' expenses. There is, of course, an existing unique identifier system for suppliers. It's called a VAT number.
Okay, all right. There's a company's house number as well. So there's a couple. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried about geocoding the location of where they made the purchase, because I'm thinking that is a bit too much like tracking. People do NPC maps. This is where my NPC spends all of their time. It's like, in one sense that's good, in another sense.
But what this does is, if you say this is possible, it puts the onus on the committee to think really hard about what's allowed to be public in the first place and what's not. What you don't want is them, for example, to make certain assumptions about how easy it is to search through data that are wrong, that are outdated.
Yeah.
They then leave things in that are public, that are dangerous, just because they didn't think about the technology enough. Whereas if you actually say, here's a use case, do you want that to be the case? They can either, do you want the public to have that?
Yeah.
They can either basically rule it in or rule it out. If you don't mention it, it's not in the spec, you don't describe it, then what happens is all that locational information is still there. Someone writes more malign, manually, manually geocodes
you don't want to, and then goes and does whatever. You don't want
them
to be getting creepy feelings about your suggestions because it looks like you're arguing for, you know, being able to track MPs everywhere. So you could say, by the way, if you do this, you know, you this is allowed. You have to decide whether you want it or not. We're not saying this is what we like.
I think it will be a conditional document. I mean, it's going to say for things like if you choose to make MPs' home addresses public, then, you know, it's just going
to
be a bit of a thing.
I think you should do that down to the first four digits of the postcode, so not the last two. Because then you can normally tell if someone's
moved, but their address is already public, so you have a piece of sort of like information age naivety where the one law says it is correct and right that MPs should be fully identified, and another law that says it is right that they be identified down to like partial postcode. One of those is wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe the old one is wrong and they should all be partial postcodes, but in which case they should be in the business of changing the old law.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to have anything in here where we suggest things that are inconsistent with what's already out there.
Yeah.
Right, anyway, that was very good. Now I'm really nervous because there's no internet connection here. This hasn't been synced externally.
Well, I have a T-Mobile 3G stick if you want to borrow it. It just works with Linux Magic.
I would almost rather if someone just had a USB stick, a memory stick, and just took a copy.
There you go. 128 meg would probably fit that file on.
Yeah, just
one more thing. Where do we get food?
Normally you have to go outside, don't you?
I have Wi-Fi.
Sorry?
I have Wi-Fi.
Oh, you've got the secret Wi-Fi infrastructure. Yeah, all right, if you don't mind.
They're not exactly trivial.
Wait a second. I just closed the laptop and now I'm opening it again.